Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to episode 57 of the Tone Junkie podcast. My, how far we've come. Thanks, everybody, who reached out to me after episode 56. Appreciate all support. I am okay. You know, everybody just has to process their stuff. Hey, you know, I'm sitting here, and it's kind of a little funny episode today. It's going to be a rather short one because I got Desi Serna coming in here, and we're about to do some demos. But I just thought I'd jump on here and just give my thoughts really quickly on some stuff that I'm working on. It has to do with the Helix. I got to tell you, the more time I spend with the Helix, the more I'm impressed with it. Not from a product design standpoint in the sense that I think most of the sounds out of the box are garbage. And I really mean that. I know that I'm not trying to call anybody out here or anything. I know there's guys like Alex Strabala and Jason Sedites who have made content about these are all the things you should do with the Helix, but it actually sounds pretty good out of the box. And I think it's important to qualify what pretty good means. And I'll give you my take on this. Does the Helix sound pretty good out of the box? Sure, it sounds fine out of the box. But when you actually start A-Bing it to other stuff, when you start A-Bing it to amps or like the Kemper, for example, like a Tone Junkie profile, right? That's my frame of reference, right? So when I sit down, I just made a new patch here. And I actually think the stuff that I just made, that I'm making right now, I actually have made about 10 new Helix patches, and I've just been waiting to release them because I want to utilize some of the 2.8, the new Helix 2.8 stuff. And I've been getting a ton of people asking, hey, HW, when are you going to have some more Helix HX Stomp stuff? And the thing is, coffee today, by the way. The thing is, I've been sitting on some, I've just been waiting for 2.8, and I'm just going to start putting a couple out. And so I'll probably put out two in the next couple days. We previously did the Match Channel 1 and the JTM45 Normal Channel. Well, I'm going to do the JTM45 Bright and the Match 2. Here's the thing. I almost think I need to redo the old ones because to me, they're not quite as full as they should be. And that's a characteristic of the Helix, or so I thought. Really, what I've had to do is I'm using a couple different EQs in different parts of the chain. Now, people, when they see the patches, are going to go, why are you doing this like this? And I'm just telling you, I don't know how this unit works internally, but I'm telling you, high cuts don't, in different parts of the chain, are not cutting all the highs. Low cuts are not cutting all the lows. Because what I'm noticing with the Helix is, if on the IR block, if I cut down, if I do a high cut at 10K, it should be that later on, if I put another high cut and try and cut more 10K out, there shouldn't be anything above 10K. And yet there is. And it's not after a delay. It's not after a reverb where maybe the delay or reverb is making other frequencies. No. The high cuts on the IR just don't do the same thing as the high cuts on the block itself. And multiple high cuts and low cuts seem to do a thing. Somebody commented on the group here, and I could find who it is. What's his name? You know what's so funny, guys, is I know everyone by their profile photo. His name's Jesse Johnson. And what's funny is I can see him in my head with his wife or girlfriend. She's wearing maroon. He's wearing a dark shirt, like a bluish green dark shirt. In my head, I can see him, blonde guy, glasses, Jesse Johnson. That's his name. I just looked him up. What's funny is I know everyone, you recognize people's faces, you know? I recognize the, your profile photo kind of more than people's names. But here's the thing, man, is there is this extra sort of high end in the Helix, this really pushy, unnatural sort of sound. And you kind of have to cut it out if you want a mid-rangey live sound. Now, jumping back to the thing of does Helix sound good out of the box? It it sounds better than a lot of stuff out of the box, like other digital units. I even might say, I don't think the Helix out of the box sounds worse than the Kemper with the old Kemper profiles, those ones before like Michael Britt stuff was built in and other people's stuff was built in, which I'm trying to get the Tone Junkie stuff built in there. Kemper says they're good to do it, just going to take a little while. So my point here is like, what is pretty good? And it's like, what does that mean, pretty good? Like, what is pretty good? Like, does a Joyer pedal sound pretty good? Does a Moore pedal, does a Joyo pedal sound pretty good? Yeah, they sound pretty good. I think there's really something to be said, though. Like, guitar players, we really pay for that last... I'm going to say this. For the Helix, out of the box, it's 75% of the way there. But that's a big 25% left over. In fact, I think everyone can hear that 25% difference. Does it sound like a Vox if you put up a Vox? Sure. Does it sound like a Fender? Sure. I think we're 75% of the way there. But you have to wrestle this thing. And actually, once you I got to say this, I think I'm more used to wrestling the Kemper than I am wrestling the Helix. And so I have more affinity towards the Kemper because my wrestling with it doesn't feel like wrestling. It feels like finesse. And the more I use the Helix and HX stuff, the more it feels like finesse. And I am starting to appreciate a lot of things about this unit. I love the programmability. One of the cool things that I've been able to do here, which I can't do with the Kemper, is I'm able to actually build like kind of my own effects, which is really cool. Like one thing you'll see in some of these Tone Junkie like Helix presets is something I call Ambient Verb. And Ambient Verb is just my ability to program two verbs in stereo, turn them completely on or off, and then kind of have them come after all the rest of the things. It's just an Ambient Verb effect. Well, I can just call it Ambient Verb here, which is great. And I don't need to get into glitz on one side, cave on the other. You know what I mean? I don't need to get into all that. I don't need to get into another one that I call Chorotrem, where I'm basically taking a chorus and a trem and setting them up in a way where I'm like, what if we had a chorus and trem together? Well, I can do that with two blocks. I can dial them each in how I want them. And sort of this subtle chorus and this subtle trem become a new effect, becomes a Chorotrem. So when you pull up the Helix, you just see a button called Chorotrem. And I'm able to assign two effects to one button. Another cool thing I'm able to do, which is really awesome, is I just have an effect I call wet. And wet is actually the ability, I'm going to pull it up here so I don't say the wrong thing. Wet is the ability to not only... It's the ability to, okay, well, here's one. Wet to me is the ability to change multiple parameters across multiple effects. So it's the ability to, whenever I'm on any sound, clean, overdrive, what I call rock and lead, it's just the ability to get more or less wet by editing multiple parameters of the same, how do I put this? It's the ability to morph. It's the ability to morph multiple parameters across multiple delays and reverbs so that whatever I have set up, if it's a double reverb, if it's a double delay, like a galloping delay and a reverb, I'm able to effectively do what I do on the Kemper, which is let's up each of these. Let's put more reverb and more delay on each level. Now, maybe I don't want the second delay because it's usually a longer delay. Usually when I set up galloping delays, I'll do like a dotted eighth and a quarter, right? So a dotted eighth into a quarter. Well, I want the mix to go up and I might want more feedback and mix on the dotted eighth, but I might want more feedbacks on the quarter note, but I don't actually want more mix on the quarter note. Like, I might want it to go longer, but I don't need that quarter to go louder, or vice versa. I maybe don't need that quarter note to go longer. I just need more volume. So I'm going to come up in the mix, and I'm going to come up in the feedback and the mix of the eighth, of the dotted eighth, because that's going to just give me a wetter sound. And then I'm going to up the verb, and that's going to give me a wetter sound. And with the touch of one button, I can effectively almost do what is morphing on the Kemper, but it has some advantages, some disadvantages. On the Kemper, I'm kind of able to, I shouldn't say that. I could set the Helix up different to act pretty much just like the Kemper acts. But it's a really cool effect that allows me, whether I'm clean, overdrive, rock, lead, whatever, whatever gain stage I'm on, I'm able to add this sort of, do you want to get wetter or less wet? Or I can just add a completely new, something else I call ambient pad, which I'm adding a whole nother reverb and delay specifically designed to give me a pad-like sound. And I can add that on anywhere. The programmability in this thing is amazing, but it's the amp sounds that need the finesse, where I feel like it's the opposite with the Kemper. Once I make the profiles, it's not the amp sounds that need the finesse. It's more the effects I add afterwards. It's more some of the parameters. And it's more kind of how it all works together, where with the Helix, I'm really taking the majority of the time to go, I got to get this bass tone right. And I'm doing little things that go a long way. You know, like for example, working with the JTM45 patch in the Helix, the JTM45 amp sim, one of the things I'm immediately noticing is that the low end is wrong. It's not correct. It's exaggerated. You see, how do I put this? The master on like JTM45s have this characteristic that old Marshalls have, where the bass can take on almost a fuzzy kind of characteristic. And there's a version of that in the Helix, but it's not quite the way a real JTM45 does it. It's there, but I find that it gets too loose. It's a little too loose, and I'm going, wait a minute, JTM45 doesn't do it that much, or there's a certain characteristic about it that's just a little bit different to me than I've heard JTM45s. And I've had a JTM45. I've profiled it. I have a lot of videos of me playing it on different settings and stuff. And so what I've been able to do is actually cut some, again, it seems to be this overall frequency. There's too much in the frequency range. So what I end up doing is I end up after the IR, and this is how I get the most accurate sound to me. I end up doing a little bit of cut on the IR. Below 100 hertz is cut out, and above 10K is cut out. Now you might be saying, HW, that doesn't make any sense. But here's the thing. Cutting it on the IR doesn't do what it's saying it does. It is not taking out all information above 10K. No way. Because later I add another cut and I'm able to still further control the high end by cutting above. Like if I take my cut up to 15K, I hear more high end on the second cut than if I pull it all the way down to 10. Theoretically, that shouldn't happen. Once you cut everything above 10K out, there should be no information left. And yet you still can add another cut and allow more or less in there. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. But like one of the things I'm able to do to get that low end to be a little more correct is after the IR, I'm still cutting below 80 hertz. Some information is cutting out, meaning I think it's not a hard cut, but it's a rather a slope that's coming off. Like around 10K, start cutting off low end. That's kind of what I hear happening. I'm sorry, cutting off high end. So, and around 100, start cutting off. But that means there's still frequency at 80. At 75, at 70, that are being sloped off, but they're not. It's not a hard, complete cut, right? So what I'm doing to get better low end, and some of you could try this if you're Helix users, you know, 80 hertz, I'm bringing down about 3 decibels. At 240, I'm bringing it down less, about 1.5 decibels, because I don't want as much low end. And around 750, I'm actually upping it. I want a little higher mids, the high bass, low mid stuff. And that's actually where I'm adding in a little more assertiveness, and what it translates to is a tightness that I think the actual amp has that I don't quite get from the model. And here's where I really notice it. It's in the decay of the note. It's when you just slap a chord big, the amp sim has it. It gets it right. But it's when you pull back that I don't quite feel that the touch sensitivity also tightens the bass, because that bass is running out of headroom on the real amp. So when you hit it light, the bass should be tighter. It shouldn't be breaking up. It shouldn't be getting too loose, I should say. Not breaking up. It is breaking up, but it's staying tighter. But as you push, boom, you got the rectifier tube running out of headroom. You got the power tubes running out of headroom. Maybe the phase inverter is running out of headroom. And that's where you get that fuzzy quality characteristic. And so I'm adding more tightness in the bass. Then I'm adding a couple modulation effects. Then I'm going back and doing my high cut refinements, where I'm actually cutting the high end a little more, then getting into the delays and reverbs. And to me, that seems to be working really awesome. And I'm really going after a more natural, mid-rangey kind of sound. Still, I think, with enough high end, but really trying to emulate what I'm getting on the Kemper and some of my favorite mic'd up tones, you know, that I'm getting when really trying to get great Kemper stuff. So I'm really excited about that. Quick podcast today. Just thought I'd share my thoughts. I'm more and more impressed with the Helix. I might even try and use this thing live. But really, I am able to approach what I'm kind of getting on the Kemper and what I love about some of my best Kemper profiles here. And I should say more than that, getting sounds I'm really happy with. Is it good out of the box? To me, it's 75% of the way there. And to me, that 75% should be heard by 75% of people. You should be able to hear that difference. I think with a lot of refinement and tweaking, I can get it almost all the way to where I'm really, really happy with it. Every now and then, I still run into one or two little things. And really, I don't think it's the sound quality. It has to do with some amp sims are better than others. Whereas I feel like, here's the thing. Now that I've made over 2,500 Kemper profiles, you know, done like 100 amps or something in the Kemper, I have this huge bank to pull from that have this level of consistency that I'm not running into bad Kemper profiles. You know what I'm saying? If you have the Tone Junkie Everything Pack, if you have a Tone Junkie bundle, or you've just bought, you know, 10 Tone Junkie packs, your Kemper's probably full of packs that are probably pretty consistently pretty good, in my opinion, right? I mean, I try to put out stuff I think is good. So I'm on my Kemper, I'm not running into the bad stuff, if that makes sense. And so on the Helix, less and less I'm running into the bad stuff. And every now and then, though, I try to go to some new amp sim and I go, is this right? How does this sound? And I go, oh, what is that? And it's not that the Helix can't do it. It's that what they give you out of the box when you just pull up the stuff is not right. It's overly bright. Amps don't sound like that. And I'm never going to be one of the fans. Look, the Kemper profiles out of the box, the ones that were made by Kemper Amps, they kind of suck, right? Is it fine? Yeah. Could someone enjoy it? Yeah. But I wasn't convinced on the Kemper till I played the Michael Britt stuff. And I wasn't convinced on the Helix until I played Tanner Yates stuff and Bill Boyce's stuff. Their stuff, they shared with me some presets and I went, oh wow, this unit actually can sound good. And then I started looking at what everybody was doing. Then I started going, oh wow, so Worshipatorial stuff sounds good. This sounds really good. To me, their free one is a great building block thing. You take that, start throwing in any effects you like on top of it, and you can do a Sunday morning. To me, the Strabala stuff sounds good. I hear people with it all the time. It sounds good. It sounds great. So I just run into this thing where it took me playing the Michael Britt stuff and discovering Michael Britt to realize the potential of the unit. And then it took me you know, discovering multiple people, but really it was Tanner stuff that I saw and him really doing a lot in those patches and going, wow, these effects sound amazing. And so that's to me where I witnessed, okay, this unit has a lot of power. And look, am I late to the Helix game? Of course. I'm just a tone junkie, so I'm after tone. I'm not trying to be the trailblazer all the time. You know what I mean? But I want to call a spade here. I don't think out of the box these units sound very good. And I think that's the downfall of the companies in what they're putting in there. I hope on future iterations they can just get the right people. Like, I hope they call all the guys who make Helix stuff and all the guys who make Kemper stuff and go on the next iterations of these platforms, whatever that may be, they get them to put in some stuff out of the box. And Kemper's doing that. All Kempers now ship with different stuff, you know, in there. And hopefully pretty soon, some Tone Junkie stuff. I'm HW. Thanks so much for listening. And I just wanted to get that off my chest. Some thoughts on the Helix versus the Kemper. I'm really enjoying the Helix, but I'm super enjoying the Kemper as always. The new pack, Dirty Surly, it's probably out right at the time you're listening to this. I'm HW. Thanks so much for listening. HW, out.